I have Sarah Russell on the line. She is a licensed clinical social worker at Creekside Counseling. Sarah, thanks so much for taking a moment to help us weigh in on this tragic school shooting, a situation that unfortunately has become all too familiar.
Yes.
So,
I'm happy to meet with you.
So, Sarah, this is a situation where we have a 17-year-old who opens fire at Antioch High School in a suburb of Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee, and then turns the gun on himself. We're just seeing too much of this. What are you seeing in terms of maybe some changes with the mental health of our young people?
I think our society as a whole has changed a lot, and that's definitely reflected in the culture, particularly surrounding, you know, violence and challenges with escalating anxiety and depression and managing our hard feelings for adolescents in particular. The thing that I see is that we, you know, from it's a big word, anthropological standpoint, right? If we look at our bodies and our nervous systems, they were just not designed for the kind of stimulation to our nervous systems that life offers, particularly for kids. And so our nervous systems are so overwhelmed that you see a lot of kids that just don't know how to manage their feelings or connect to others very well, or really have enough time to recover and calm down between difficult events and just really the hard parts of growing up.
You know, Sarah, once upon a time, there was this philosophy where, you know what, kids just need to pick themselves up by their bootstraps and just keep moving forward. There wasn't as much understanding or compassion about those big feelings and how they really do impact people. Are you still seeing some of that?
I think that in Idaho, we have more of a tendency towards that. I just think that there's so much difference in generations, right? For the, my kids are in their 20s now. And so for my generation, it wasn't that there wasn't really an access to mental health, but we all did better. And I'm going to maybe sound old, but what you'd go to school and there would be drama at school, but you would go home and there was a complete disconnect from that. There was no phone, there was no social media. So whatever happened that day, you know, we all went to bed. We went home, we went to bed at night, and we came back the next day. And by and large, all of that had calmed down, and each day was kind of a new day. And so this pull yourself up by the bootstraps, we also lived with our families and we had a lot closer community association and downtime. There weren't video games, or there was time for your nervous system to recover and have a break. But nowadays, life looks pretty exciting, right? You have kids that don't really have that time away. There's constant exposure to social media. Their downtime often is playing a video game or doing another activity, which isn't necessarily bad, but does keep your nervous system on high alert many of the games. And so there's really not a disconnect for that nervous system to be able to calm down, to be able to reset. And oftentimes, how we feel about the world, whether it's threatening or not, is a matter of perception, right? And so if your nervous system is always hyper aroused, your perception creates a lot more danger for you. And I think that that's really difficult to manage as a teenager. You still aren't used to your, you know, growing. You just face so many changes as a teenager and so many new firsts that it's enough to be learning how to do life, but there's not really the downtime to be able to assimilate all of that.
And that makes an awful lot of sense. So, Sarah, what do we do to be more helpful and supportive to this younger generation as we take into consideration that their nervous system is not getting that downtime? But it's not just teens. I mean, I think that adults are experiencing this as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think that it's important to, in counseling, we have a lot of people that come and start counseling and they say, oh, I have depression or I have anxiety. And when they sit down and we really talk about it, depression is a word for your biological response sometimes to hard emotions, right? If I ask somebody to describe what depression feels like, it feels like heavy and hopeless and tired and sad, and usually comes with crying. And right, if we were describing depression, we would say all of those things. But if I really take a deeper look at that, sometimes depression is just loneliness or just, somebody, I felt slighted today. I felt a little bit rejected at school today, or I had so many things going on. I didn't do well on a test, or, depression is your biological response to a myriad of different emotions. And some of those emotions are fleeting. Some of them are maybe bigger and need a bigger look and some more self-compassion. And I don't think that as a society, we're very good at distinguishing our emotions from these biological responses. And as we, don't know, my comparison is like, I need to know how to operate my equipment, right? I've got this smart brain and I've got this soul and all of these feelings, and then I have this body to take care of. And all of those parts of me have to work together to keep me safe and engaged and connected to people. And the challenge, I think, in our society is that there's a disconnect from all those different parts of us. And if we aren't really in tune and able to care for ourselves, that impairs our ability to be able to reach out and connect with other people too. And humans fundamentally need connection.
It's so
So,
true.
yeah, it's more complicated than that. It's there's not simple answers.
Right. Sarah, is there one red flag that you could point to for parents to have a takeaway? Because so often we hear that old saying, kids will be kids, they'll grow out of it, but you're helping us to understand it's so much more complicated than that. What's a red flag they could look out for?
I also probably don't think that red flag is necessarily the right way to identify it. I think because in our society too, we'll be like, oh, if your kid says this one thing or if they do this one thing, that should alert you and put you on high alert. When really a flag is not it's not an alternative to an empathetic conversation, I guess.
I love that.
So I think that curiosity is the best, curiosity and empathy is the best thing that you can offer your child as a parent to, if they say, I am mad or I hate this, instead of saying, man, don't hate that, or try not to be so negative, or offer an intervention that invalidates their feeling, the best thing that you can do as a parent is be curious, like, gosh, that's a big emotion. What's happening? Help me understand where you're coming from today. Like what happened? What does this hate feel like in your body? Are you feeling impulsive? Do you like curiosity instead of feeling defensive or feeling like you need to fix something is the most powerful thing that we have to offer to somebody else, is to be able to sit with them and not be threatened by their emotions, but rather be a partner in helping to explore those.
Sarah, that's a great bit of advice, and I believe that's a tool we can all take to heart. There is something about human nature that you're exactly right, leads us to maybe be uncomfortable with somebody else's emotions and to want to go into that fix-it mode. But as we're trying to fix it, you're right, we're invalidating their feelings and not really addressing that. So I love that you're empowering parents to get curious, to lean in, and to ask some good questions that will make their child feel seen, heard, and valued in that difficult time.
Well, I appreciate that. I love the work that I get to do, a large part of counseling. I mean, we as counselors, we sit with people who are hurting. And the most fundamental, most powerful ingredient to good counseling is being able to sit with somebody who's in pain and to be able to love them and not be uncomfortable and want to get out of it. Having gone through some difficult things in my life as well, it's like, it really is isolating when somebody goes through turbulent times, because other people don't like that. I don't like to watch somebody else suffering. I would like to be able to make it better for them, when the reality is they can't make it better for them. I can't make it better for them. I can make sure that they aren't having to do it alone.
I love that. Sometimes people really do just need a witness. And I think the way you've put it, we can all think back to a time where we felt really alone because of what we were going through. And we didn't need advice or somebody to fix it. We needed a witness, somebody who was willing to sit there as we navigated what was really going on.
Absolutely. That kind of human connection, that kind of friendship is priceless. I mean, it's really what we're all looking for in life. And so when you look at some of these tragedies that are going on in the world, when you see people that are acting out, when you see hateful behavior, you know, I can give an example. I saw this remarkable teenager whose parents were going through a difficult time, right? And as a teenager, you're not privy to what goes on with your parents. But this teenager's trying to work out, like, who's the good guy and who's the bad guy? Like, what happened in my family? What parent did what? Like, why are we, you know, why divorce, right? That's a hard thing. And as we talked, we really came to the conclusion that there's not a good guy and there's not a bad guy. There's a whole bunch of messy guys doing the best that they can do. And when a whole bunch of messy guys get together, there's going to be messes. And it doesn't mean that we have to find somebody to blame or that we need to, like, break it down to something exact. It means that there's room to have compassion from all of the perspectives. And when you can have the perspective, when you can have that kind of compassion from different perspectives for others, then you can have it for yourself. And it makes kindness and love more powerful than the disconnection that comes with some of these hard behaviors and hard things.
We almost have to unlearn some of what we've grown up with and take on some new tools. I love your perspective, because we've kind of grown up. I think we can all count many times in our lives where it's been good cop, bad cop. And we kind of go into a situation literally looking for who's the good cop, who's the bad cop. But I love that you're saying, nope, it's a lot of messy people trying to do the best that they can with where they're at.
Yeah, darn it. That makes life tricky. It's also part of what makes it beautiful.
It is beautiful. Beautiful chaos. I've heard that before. And the first time I heard it, Sarah, I thought, wow, that's interesting. But now it has a little bit deeper meaning. And with this example that you've shared, I think beautiful chaos relates to the fact that if we can see other people with grace, then we're going to be able to do some healing on ourselves.
Yes. Another theme in my office when I'm doing counseling is that people will tell their story, and then they will come to the conclusion. They'll tell this story to me, and I am listening and empathetic, and I'm in it with them. And then their conclusion is, so I'm a bad person, or I'm ashamed. And I'm like, wow, that is not what I got out of that story. And then I will tell them back the story that I heard. What I heard is that, like, here's this person who's gone through all of these things. Like, of course this would be hard. Like, I think as people, we feel shame and apologetic for some of the emotions or responses that we have, when most of the time our emotions and responses make sense with what we've gone through. And I don't think that shame and, I don't know, just being unkind to ourselves, right, by that mean voice that we all kind of have in our head that says, do harder, try harder, do the thing, right? Sometimes that voice helps to motivate us to be better, but oftentimes that voice is a bully, and I think the real trick and what is truly motivational is to figure out how to offer yourself kindness and to hear your story from someone else's perspective. Because I'm typically harder on myself than other people would be on me. And that's certainly true of the clients that I see. Like, they're all beautiful people who are doing hard things.
Right. I think you're spot on. We are harder on ourselves. And we look at our story with a really critical eye, and we don't often recognize that our story has the power to lift and inspire other people. Beautiful stuff. I'll tell you what, Sarah, I continue to believe that this kind of curriculum would be a nice addition to our school system, because these are just some tools that, given all the advancements in technology, I think are critical.
Oh, human connection is truly the most important, I think, ingredient to happiness and fulfillment in life. And honestly, the key to life is how we connect to other people. And yet there's really no training for that. I don't know that I got a lot out of math class in high school either, but I do think that there's a lot of value in teaching and supporting our children and our schools in having a higher degree of emotional intelligence and ability to connect with others.
I could not agree more. These are the kinds of skills that you're going to use forever in every arena. Sarah Russell, licensed clinical social worker at Creekside Counseling, thank you so much for your perspective today.
Yeah, thanks for giving me the opportunity to visit with you.
You bet.